1 Samuel 21, as we continue our journey through a dark period of David's life. 1 Samuel 21, notice verse 10 and following. Last week, remember, we looked at why God allowed the slaughter of an entire city of priests, the city of Nob. Notice here, 1 Samuel 21, and I've kind of generally entitled this this section, Beware of Running Out of the Will of God. All right, so think about David. He's been anointed already to be the next king, and now he's running for fear. As we see in verse 10, David arose and fled that day for fear of Saul and went to Achish, the king of Gath. All right, so let's remind ourselves the exact wording of the Bible back in chapter 17. Why is Gath so significant? Well, it should ring a bell as far as our mind here. As it says here, 1 Samuel 17, verse 1. Now the Philistines gathered together their armies to battle and were gathered together at Shoco, which belongeth to Judah, and pitched between Shoco and Azekah in Ephes-Damon. And Saul and the men of Israel were gathered together and pitched by the valley of Elah and set the battle in array against the Philistines. And the Philistines stood on a mountain on the one side, and Israel stood on a mountain on the other side, and there was a valley between them. And there went out a champion out of the camp of the Philistines named Goliath of where? Goliath of Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. So now we see time passes, and we see that David runs to Gath for shelter from Saul. Back in chapter 21, notice again, for fear of Saul, he runs to Achish, the king of Gath. Now, so it makes you wonder how is this going to go? I mean, he has a reputation of dealing with somebody from Gath. The servants of Achish said unto him, "Is not this David, the king of the land?" Notice how they describe David. Is this not David, the king? Well, I thought Saul was the king. Well, evidently they're already realizing that things are changing as far as David and his popularity in relation to being king. It says even the Philistines are asking, "Is not this David, the king of the land?" I thought that was interesting as it grabbed my attention. "Did they not sing one to another of him in dances, saying, 'Saul hath slain his thousands, and David his 10,000s. And David laid up these words in his heart, and notice, was sore afraid of Achish, the king of Gath. Is he going to deliver him to Saul, or is he going to kill him? And he changed his behavior before them, and feigned himself mad or insane in their hands." And notice, in their hands. They're already arresting him, grabbing him. "And scrabbled on the doors of the gate and let his spittle fall down upon his beard. Then said Achish unto his servants, 'Lo, ye see the man is mad. Wherefore then have ye brought him to me? Have I need of madmen that ye have brought this fellow to play the madman in my presence? Shall this fellow come into my house?'" Notice with me Psalm 34. I think it's very interesting to take a look at the psalms that are written in each of these events. Notice with me Psalm 34. And as we notice the heading here, it tells us the context of Psalm 34. Psalm of David, when he changed his behavior before Abimelech, who drove him away and he departed. Notice it says here in this passage, "I will bless the Lord at all times. His praise shall continually be in my mouth. My soul shall make her boast in the Lord. The humble shall hear thereof and be glad." Now, notice it talks about Abimelech. Abimelech is actually a title, because you remember in Genesis, it even talks about Abimelech. So that's a title of the kings of the Philistines. It says here in verse 2, "My soul shall make her boast in the Lord. The humble shall hear thereof and be glad." So you notice that the proud will not be glad when somebody is boasting and praising the Lord. It says, "O magnify the Lord with me, and let us exalt his name together. I sought the Lord, and he heard me, and delivered me from all my fears. They looked unto him, and were lightened, and notice their faces were not ashamed. This poor man cried, and the Lord heard him, and saved him out of all his troubles." I don't know if he was begging God to deliver him or what, as they're taking hold of him. "The angel of the Lord encampeth," of course, that's the Lord Jesus Christ, "the angel of the Lord encampeth round about them that fear him and delivereth them. O taste and see that the Lord is good. Blessed is the man that trusteth in him. O fear the Lord, ye his saints, for there is no want to them that fear him. Notice his provision. The young lions do lack and suffer hunger, but they that seek the Lord shall not want any good thing. Notice God's goodness. Come ye children, hearken unto me, and I will teach you the fear of the Lord. What man is he that desireth life and loveth many days, that he may see good? Keep thy tongue from evil and thy lips from speaking guile. Depart from evil and do good. Seek peace and pursue it. The eyes of the Lord are upon the righteous. Notice his omniscience. And his ears are open unto their cry. The face of the Lord is against them that do evil, to cut off the remembrance of them from the earth. The righteous cry, and the Lord heareth, and delivereth them out of all their troubles. The Lord is nigh unto them that are of a broken heart, and saveth such as be of a contrite spirit. Many are the afflictions of the righteous. David's going through afflictions right now as he's running from Saul. But the Lord delivereth him out of them all. You notice this, as he's writing this, under the inspiration of the Holy Spirit, and praying this to the Lord. The Lord delivereth him out of them all. All right, so one by one, the Lord delivers him out of his afflictions and his trials. He keepeth all his bones, not one of them is broken. Of course, that's ultimately a fulfillment in the Son of David, Jesus Christ. Evil shall slay the wicked, and they that hate the righteous shall be desolate. The Lord redeemeth the soul of his servants, and none of them that trust in him shall be desolate. Also notice Psalm 56. Psalm 56. And what I think is interesting is I've been working my way ahead a little bit. There's a time when it doesn't seem like there's any psalms written. So you notice here again, you have to be careful. You're vulnerable when you're running. Running in fear. Notice the heading here says, to the chief musician upon, I'll let you read that long word, and Jonathan, and Chokum. See, the way you do that is you say it real fast, just kind of mumble it, and then nobody knows any difference. But again, you know, that's a long word there. It says, Miktam of David, when the Philistines took him in Gath, be merciful unto me, O God, for man would swallow me up, he fighting daily oppresseth me. Mine enemies would daily swallow me up, for they be many that fight against me. O thou Most High. Notice he's trusting in the Most High God to help him. What time I am afraid, I will trust in thee. In God I will praise his word. In God I have put my trust. I will not fear what the flesh can do unto me. Every day they wrest my words. All their thoughts are against me for evil. They gather themselves together. They hide themselves. They mark my steps when they wait for my soul. Shall they escape by iniquity? In thine anger cast down the people, O God. Now, you notice here, in fact, there's several psalms like this, where it calls on God's anger and wrath, his judgment to come upon the wicked. Notice, in thine anger cast down the people, O God. I want God's anger for me and not against me. Thou tellest my wanderings, put thou my tears in thy bottle, are they not in thy book? This has been a great comfort to a lot of people. When you understand the context, it's almost like David is thinking, wow, they almost took me. Could they have taken my life? Again, he says he feared Achish exceedingly, was so afraid of him. When I cry unto thee, then shall mine enemies turn back. This I know, for God is for me. In God will I praise his word. In the Lord will I praise his word. In God have I put my trust. Again, this is like verses 3 and 4 here. He's repeating this and emphasizing it. In God have I put my trust. I will not be afraid what man can do unto me. Thy vows are upon me, O God. I will render praises unto thee, for thou hast delivered my soul from death. I really believe David thought he was going to die at the hands of the Philistines there. Wilt not thou deliver my feet from falling, that I may walk before God in the light of the living? Now let's go back to 1 Samuel 21. What's interesting is as he takes off running, he ends up back there in Gath later. Again, you have to be careful when you're running in fear because you are vulnerable to making bad, bad decisions. Chapter 22, verse 1. David therefore departed thence and escaped to the cave Adullam. And when his brethren and all his father's house heard it, they went down thither to him. All right, we're going to do a lot with the Psalms here. Notice Psalm 142. Psalm 142. Again, I believe by looking at the Psalms, it gives us David's heart instead of just information and facts of history. This shows us what he's struggling with as far as his emotions and his trust in the Lord and all those things. Notice it says here, Psalm 142, the heading again, a prayer when he was in the cave. I cried unto the Lord with my voice. With my voice unto the Lord did I make my supplication. All right, so when he's in the cave of Adullam, he has Saul hunting him down. And he's wondering if the Philistines are going to follow him, pursue after him as well. Again, he's crying out to God for the Lord to hear his supplication, his prayer. I poured out my complaint before him. I showed before him my trouble. When my spirit was overwhelmed within me, then thou knewest my past. There's at least three psalms that talks about our spirit being overwhelmed. Have you ever felt so overwhelmed by circumstances? Notice the best place is to look up when you're overwhelmed by circumstances. Notice it says, in the way wherein I walked, have they privily laid a snare for me. I looked on my right hand and beheld, and there was no man that would know me. Notice that statement there. We're going to see that God is actually going to bring together hundreds of men to stand with him. I looked on my right hand and beheld, there was no man that would know me. Refuge failed me. No man cared for my soul. He's alone in the cave of Adullam. I cried unto thee, O Lord. I said, thou art my refuge and my portion in the land of the living. Again, when no one cares, the Lord is our refuge. Attend unto my cry, for I am brought very low. Deliver me from my persecutors, for they are stronger than I. Bring my soul out of prison, that I may praise thy name. The righteous shall compass me about, for thou shalt deal bountifully with me. Notice, thou shalt in the future deal bountifully with me. He knows he's already been anointed as the next king, and yet he's still running for his life. Back in 1 Samuel 22, notice everyone. All right, so here sounds like a good Baptist church. Everyone that was in distress, everyone that was in debt, and everyone that was discontented gathered themselves unto him, and he became a captain over them. And there was with him about 400 men. It's going to grow to 600 eventually. But these are commonly referred to as David's mighty men. I want you to see the statement of this, 2 Samuel 23. This was actually written later near the end of David's life, but it's a summary of the mighty men. So as these men were gathering around him, they were distressed, they were in debt, they were dealing with discontentment, the circumstances of the kingdom, whatever that may imply. But notice here the description of David's mighty men. These be the names of the mighty men whom David had. All right, so these are the ones that gathered around him as he was running from Saul. First of all, the Tachmonite that sat in the seat. All right, so he was chief among the captains. All right, so he was the leader among leaders, we might call him. The same was Adino, the Eznite. Notice his description here. He lift up his spear against 800 men whom he slew at one time. So here's this man, Adino. He takes a spear and he deals with 800 men by himself with a spear. All right, so that's an accomplishment. So he's the leader of leaders. Verse 9, and after him was Eleazar, the son of Dodo, the Ahohite. How'd you like to have a name Dodo? Evidently, it was a common name because there's more than one time we see that it's mentioned in this short passage here. Notice he was one of the three mighty men with David. So he had three men in particular that rose up above the others among mighty men. Notice it says when they defied the Philistines that were gathered together to battle and the men of Israel were gone away. Notice what he did. He arose and smote the Philistines until his hand was weary and his hand clave unto the sword. And the Lord wrought a great victory that day, and the people returned after him only to spoil. His hand gripped the sword so strongly that they had to pry the fingers off of the sword. And it's almost like his hand locked up around the sword. After him was Shammah, the son of Agi, the Hararite. The Philistines were gathered together into a troop, and there was a piece of ground full of lentils. Why worry about a piece of ground full of lentils? Well, because it'd be food. Notice that the people fled from the Philistines. But notice it says he stood. I have those two words underlined. He stood. We need men who will stand in this day as well. But he stood in the midst of the ground and defended it and slew the Philistines. And the Lord brought a great victory. He stood. We need men who will stand today. Notice three of the 30 chief went down. All right, so here we, in addition to the three mighty men, we have three of 30 that stood out among the others. Came to David in the harvest time unto the cave of Adullam. So again, one by one, these men hear that David is down here at this cave, and they start gathering together unto him. Notice the troop of the Philistines pitched in the valley of Rephaim. And David was then in an hold, and the garrison of the Philistines was then in Bethlehem. Notice that. The garrison was in David's hometown. I'm sure that brought concern to him. The garrison of the Philistines was in Bethlehem. And David longed and said, oh, that one would give me a drink of the water, the well of Bethlehem, which is by the gate. Does that mean that this water is better tasting than any other water? Probably not. It's just that he has a longing to be home instead of in a cave. So he just speaks this out, probably almost without any consideration that others are hearing him speak this. Oh, that one would give me drink of the water, the well of Bethlehem. Again, the garrison of the Philistines is there, which is by the gate. He was not expecting anyone to actually fulfill and act on his wish. And the three mighty men break through the host of the Philistines and drew water out of the well of Bethlehem that was by the gate. I don't know if it was at night, hoping that nobody would see them or what, but I mean, they had to break through the host of the Philistines that was by the gate, notice, and took it and brought it to David. Nevertheless, he would not drink thereof, but poured it out into the Lord. And he said, be it far from me, O Lord, that I should do this. Is this not the blood of the men that went in jeopardy of their lives? So he takes this water, they risk their lives. He takes the water and pours it out on the ground. This was not something to spite them. No, it was to praise them as he's praising the Lord. He's honoring them because they risked their lives so that he could get a taste of it. But he said, this is like blood. So he pours it out in essence of a blood offering unto the Lord. Therefore, he would not drink it. These things did these three mighty men. So you have three mighty men. You have the three of 30. Abishai, the brother of Joab. So now we're introduced to Joab here. The son of Zeruiah was chief among three. He lift up his spear against 300 and slew them and had the name among three. So instead of 800, he's dealing with 300 by himself. Was he not most honorable of three? Therefore, he was their captain. Howbeit, he attained not unto the first three. So you have the three mighty men, and then you have three of the 30. Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, the son of a valiant man, a man of war. Kabzeel, notice of Kabzeel, who had done many acts. He slew two lion-like men of Moab. He went down and slew a lion in the midst of a pit in time of snow. And he slew an Egyptian, a goodly man. Evidently a strong man, in particular a man of war. And the Egyptian had a spear in his hand, and he went down to him with a staff and plucked the spear out of the Egyptian's hand and slew him with his own spear. These things did Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, and had the name among three mighty men. He was more honorable than the 30, but he attained not to the first three, and David set him over his guard. So he says, all right, if you're going to do that, you can be my guard. All right, so very likely even as king even later. Asahel, the brother of Joab, again, we have Joab's brothers mentioned here, one of the 30. Then we have Elhanan, the son of Dodo of Bethlehem. So this is a different Dodo. It's not the same Dodo, different place. Again, the list is made here, but I want you to drop down to verse 37, Zelek the Ammonite. So these are not just Israelites, even people from Judah. But notice the one that was an armor bearer to Joab. Then drop down to verse 39, very significant name later. Uriah the Hittite, 37 in all. So these are some of the first men that came to him. Let's go back to 1 Samuel 22. Samuel 22. All right, so again, there were with him about 400 men, and as I said, later on it will be 300 men. In fact, I want you to notice with me Matthew chapter 11. Hold your place there. We're coming right back. This passage came to my mind. As you think about these men were not in good situations, and let me remind you also that these are men that also had families. So you think about 400 men, then 600 men, and their families, and you're going to be leader of them. Guess who the leader's, or what the leader's going to have to be responsible to do? providing for hundreds of people, probably over 1,000 people, when it's all said and done, as far as all their families. How do you protect them? How do you provide for them? So this is giving David a real test as he's preparing to be a leader in the kingdom. Matthew 11, verse 28, "Come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest." Notice the invitation, the call comes out. "Take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly in heart, and you shall find rest unto your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." You think about Jesus Christ's call to his disciples. His disciples were 12 men, just average men. No one was highly educated. In fact, Judas was the only one from Judah. The rest of them from despised Galilee. But the Lord transformed them and used them even ultimately as the foundation of his churches. But back in 1 Samuel 22, again, these 400 men, 600 men later. Now, there's something else I want you to notice what David has to deal with here. Let me ask you, if you're running from for your life from somebody, what do you think that person might do to your family to find out where you are? This is something that I've been reading about here, even in our history in America. But notice here verse 3, 1 Samuel 22, and I had forgotten this, that David, of course, was concerned for his family. Because you notice it says again in verse 1, it says, "When his brethren and all his father's house heard it, they went down thither to him in the cave Adullam." But notice here, David went thence to Mizpah of Moab. Why is Moab significant as far as David is concerned? Think back in history. All right, let's look back at Ruth chapter 4. Ruth chapter 4. Ruth chapter 4, verse 13. "So Boaz took Ruth, and she was his wife. When he went in unto her, the Lord gave her conception, and she bare a son. And the women said unto Naomi, Blessed be the Lord, which hath not left thee this day without a kinsman, that his name may be famous in Israel. And he shall be," by the way, this is in Bethlehem, remember, "and he shall be unto thee a restorer of thy life and a nourisher of thine old age. For thy daughter-in-law, which loveth thee, which is better to thee than 7 sons, hath borne him." Naomi took the child and laid it in her bosom and became nurse unto it. And the women, her neighbors, gave it a name, saying, "This is a son born to Naomi," and they called his name Obed. "He is the father of Jesse, the father of David." Can I remind you, this is written quite a bit earlier. So Ruth and all this is probably written by Samuel, ultimately. These are the generations of Perez. Perez begat Hezron. Hezron begat Ram. Ram begat Amminadab. Amminadab begat Nashon. Nashon begat Salmon. Salmon begat Boaz. Boaz begat Obed. Obed begat Jesse. Jesse begat David. Of course, Matthew 1, this lineage of Christ. So why is going down to Moab significant? Because his great-great-grandmother was Ruth, a Moabitess. So notice here, he's seeking refuge for his elderly parents. And I'll remind you that chapter 17, verse 12, Jesse went among men for an old man in the days of Saul. So he's an elderly man. Probably his mother was older as well. Notice it says here, "He said unto the king of Moab, Let my father and my mother, I pray thee, come forth and be with you till I know what God will do for me. And he brought them before the king of Moab, and they dwelt with him all the while that David was in the hold." Now, there's discussions about whether this is the hold, the cave of Adullam, or if this was in a hold in Moab. Because notice it says in verse 5, "And the prophet Gad said unto David, Abide not in the hold, depart and get thee into the land of Judah. Then David departed and came into the forest of Hareth." Now you notice here we're introduced to Gad. That's significant because the prophet Gad was sent from Samuel, from the school of the prophets, the sons of the prophets. Gad was also one who provided counsel for David on many occasions. And you notice here it says that prophet Gad said unto him, "Abide not in the hold, depart and get thee into the land of Judah." So he goes to the forest in Judah there. Gad actually became David's historian. As you understand this later on, Gad will keep a history of the life of David. It's very significant. It's not just Samuel. Of course, can I remind you that Samuel dies in, I forgot which chapter that was now. But Samuel dies before the end of 2 Samuel. He's not writing that prophetically. So Samuel begins writing all of this, and then obviously other prophets took up the writing, and that's why 1 and 2 Samuel are called the first and second book of the Kings. According to the Hebrew Bible, there's actually four books of the Kings. 1 Samuel, 2 Samuel, 1 Kings, 2 Kings. So I remind you again, even though it's entitled 1 and 2 Samuel in our Bibles, it was not Samuel that wrote it all. So Gad was very significant in this because I'm sure he was one of them that was writing some of this. Of course, then we have the situation with Doeg and Nob. Notice chapter 23 then. And they told David, saying, "Behold, the Philistines fight against Keilah." Again, he's on the run here. He's considered an outlaw as far as Saul is concerned. "Behold, the Philistines fight against Keilah, and they rob the threshing floors." This is a similar thing related to Judges chapter 6. Remember the Midianites would come and rob the threshing floors and impoverish the nation. Well, that's exactly what the Philistines did as well. Notice they fought against Keilah, and they robbed the threshing floors. So they didn't have to labor in the harvest. They just steal it from others. And Keilah is actually on the border of the Philistine Empire, so they were coming over into Judah here. It says in verse 2, "Therefore David inquired of the Lord," possibly through Gad, maybe through Abiathar. I don't know if there's indications that he may have left because verse 6. "Therefore David inquired of the Lord, saying, shall I go and smite these Philistines? And the Lord said unto David, go and smite the Philistines and save Keilah. David's men said unto him, behold, we be afraid here in Judah. How much more if we come to Keilah on the border of the Philistines against the armies of the Philistines? Great risk and danger." So because of this opposition to this plan, notice David inquires of the Lord yet again. The Lord answered and said, "Arise, go down to Keilah, for I will deliver the Philistines into thine hand." So David and his men went to Keilah and fought with the Philistines and brought away their cattle and smote them with a great slaughter. So David saved the inhabitants of Keilah. Now, you would think Keilah would be very thankful for this, right? And it came to pass when Abiathar, the son of Ahimelech, fled to David. Notice he fled to David to Keilah. Well, I thought he went to David at the end of chapter 22. Notice he evidently left to get the ephod. It says when he came down with an ephod in his hand. Now notice this treachery here in verse 7. "It was told Saul that David was come to Keilah. And Saul said, God hath delivered him into mine hand. For he is shut in by entering into a town that hath gates and bars. And Saul called all the people together to war." Notice, he's getting the entire army together to go after David and his men. To go down to Keilah to besiege David and his men. Instead of the Philistines. David is fighting the Philistines when King Saul should have been doing that. King Saul had the army of Israel, and David knew that Saul secretly practiced mischief against him. He's plotting and scheming against David, and he said to Abiathar the priest, "Bring hither the ephod." I'm glad you have the ephod because I need direction from the Lord right now. Then said David, "O Lord God of Israel, thy servant hath certainly heard that Saul seeketh to come to Keilah to destroy the city for my sake. Will the men of Keilah deliver me up into his hand? Will Saul come down as thy servant hath heard? O Lord God of Israel, I beseech thee, tell thy servant." Notice he's desperate for an answer here. And the Lord said, "He will come down." Saul will come down. The Lord, of course, has an omniscience in all this. Then said David, "Will the men of Keilah deliver me up and my men into the hand of Saul?" And the Lord said, "They will deliver thee up." What treachery. What betrayal. He's delivered them from the Philistines, and now they're going to turn David over to King Saul. And David and his men, which were about 600, notice 600 men now, arose and departed out of Keilah and went whithersoever they could go. They're scattering everywhere, wherever they could go. And it was told Saul that David escaped from Keilah, and he forbore to go forth. And David abode in the wilderness in strongholds, remained in a mountain in the wilderness of Ziph. And Saul sought him every day, but God delivered him not into his hand. This is an interesting section right here. Every day he's looking for David, but God did not deliver him into his hand. Notice this protection from God. And David saw that Saul was come to seek his life. And David was in the wilderness of Ziph in a wood. Notice it says here, I almost think this is literal. He actually saw that Saul was coming to seek his life from his mountain perch. I don't know, his mountain lookout. But this is what is interesting, verse 16. So Saul is looking everywhere for David. But Jonathan goes and meets with him. His own son. You notice here, Jonathan did not betray David to Saul. Jonathan, Saul's son, arose and went to David into the wood and strengthened his hand in God. Notice, Jonathan is encouraging David here. And he said unto him, "Fear not, for the hand of Saul my father shall not find thee, and thou shalt be king over Israel." Notice he understood this, he knew this. "And I shall be next unto thee, and that also Saul my father knoweth." And they two made a covenant before the Lord. And David abode in the wood, and Jonathan went to his house. This is the last meeting between David and Jonathan. Jonathan will be killed. And they will not meet one another again. Notice, then came up the Ziphites. Betrayal number two here. Then came up the Ziphites to Saul to Gibeah, saying, "Doth not David hide himself with us in strongholds in the wood, in the hill of Hakilah, which is on the south of Jeshimon? Now therefore, O king, come down according to all the desire of thy soul to come down, and our part shall be deliver him into the king's hand." Psalm 54 is written at this time. Saul said, "Blessed be ye of the Lord, for ye have compassion on me." You did your patriotic duty. He's praising the Ziphites for their betrayal. "Go, I pray you, prepare yet, and know and see his place where his haunt is. Find the exact place where he's at, and who hath seen him there. Give me all the evidence here, for it is told me that he dealeth very subtly." He's very crafty. Why? Because he's calling him sneaky because he can't find him, because God's hiding him. Verse 23, "See therefore, take knowledge of all the lurking places where he hideth himself, and come yet again to me with the certainty, and I will go with you, and it shall come to pass, if he be in the land, that I will search him out throughout all the thousands of Judah." That's a very interesting statement. That's mentioned in Micah 5:2 in relation to Jesus Christ. All the thousands of Judah. "And they arose and went to Ziph before Saul, but David and his men were in the wilderness of Maon." This is going to introduce us to Nabal later. "In the plain of the south of Jeshimon. Saul also and his men sent to seek him. And they told David, wherefore he came down into a rock and abode in the wilderness of Maon with Nabal, in Nabal's territory, his area. And when Saul heard that, he pursued after David in the wilderness of Maon. And Saul went on this side of the mountain, and David and his men on that side of the mountain. And David made haste to get away for fear of Saul, for Saul and his men compassed David and his men round about to take them." He's surrounded, but he cannot find him. Notice God sent a messenger. Here's this providential working here. "There came a messenger unto Saul, saying, haste thee, saying, come, and for the Philistines have invaded the land. Wherefore Saul returned from pursuing after David and went against the Philistines. Therefore they called that place Hamalikoth. Rock of escape," that's easier to say. Rock of escape or divisions, literally divided David's men from Saul's men. "David went up from thence and dwelt in strongholds at Engedi." As I was doing some reading and study, I came across a definition of outlaw. I want you to listen to this. According to Webster's 1828 dictionary, I had to look this up because it grabbed my attention. "An outlaw is a person excluded from the benefit of the law or deprived of its protection." Did you hear what I just said? Listen carefully, because we are going to be outlaws someday. "A person excluded from the benefit of the law or deprived of its protection. Formerly, any person might kill an outlaw. But it is now held, in 1828, it is now held unlawful for any person to put to death an outlaw except the sheriff who has a warrant for that purpose. It's very interesting. I've been doing some reading and study on this. An outlaw is one who is excluded from the benefit of the law or deprived of its protection. David did not try to be an outlaw. He was made an outlaw by a tyrannical ruler. Think about that. Tyranny is going to cause us to be outlaws someday. Think about this. As we move through these chapters of David, I wanted to survey several chapters on purpose because I wanted you to see the situation that David is found in at this point. David is doing everything right. He was serving his king well. Everyone knew that. And Saul even had to admit that. But now David is running for his life from a tyrannical ruler named King Saul. He was made an outlaw by a tyrannical government. Someday, I believe Christianity is going to be illegal here in America. They're already moving that way. You know, it's a sad day when pastors are arrested simply for holding services. That's in recent history. All right, so once they figured out that they can push us that far, guess what? They're going to keep pushing. Lord, I pray that you help us to understand what we need to do as Christianity becomes more and more illegal in our land. Lord, help us to learn from David. Lord, he was very vulnerable on the run. So we're going to see that David makes several bad decisions, even ends up in Gath, of all places. So Lord, help us. Help us to not run in fear. Help us to trust you, I pray in Jesus' name.